In our sanitized modern world, we've forgotten what the cross truly represents. This symbol, now elegantly adorning church steeples and delicate jewelry, was once the Roman Empire's most horrific instrument of public torture. Imagine declaring an electric chair or gallows as your faith's central symbol. That's the shocking reality of early Christianity. This scandalous image forms the foundation of D.A. Carson's transformative work on Christian ministry. The cross establishes the only division that ultimately matters, those being saved and those perishing. The cross confronts our cultural obsessions with eloquence and wisdom. In ancient Corinth, as today, people celebrated rhetorical sophistication and philosophical discourse. Yet Paul deliberately chose to proclaim the cross in stark, unadorned terms. No worldly philosophy, whether ancient Stoicism or modern scientific materialism, has ever discerned God's redemptive plan through crucifixion. Those rejecting the cross fall into two persistent idolatries: demanding miraculous signs, setting conditions for God, or seeking wisdom, creating intellectual systems maintaining the illusion of control. Both approaches share a profound self-centeredness, treating God as if we have the right to approve him on our terms. God's wisdom in building his church consistently confounds human expectations. Paul reminds the Corinthians, "Not many of you were wise by human standards, not many were influential, not many were of noble birth." This pattern challenges modern Western evangelicalism's celebration of Christian celebrities. From fishermen like Peter to tax collectors like Matthew, God chooses ordinary people for extraordinary purposes. He selects nobodies not to shame the elite, but to prevent worldly pretensions. His purpose? So that no one may boast before him. If salvation favored education, skills, and wealth like immigration visas, human boasting would follow. Instead, a homeless person and a CEO stand equally in need of grace. The only legitimate boasting is in the Lord himself. Human boasting elevates self to supreme importance, something possible even in religious contexts where spiritual achievements become sources of pride. What truly matters is knowing God, who becomes the center for those who genuinely know him. What if our preaching truly reflected the message of the cross? Paul deliberately avoided rhetorical flourishes of his day, refusing eloquence that might overshadow the crucified Messiah. Though adaptable to different audiences, he drew the line where the gospel might be compromised. Paul's resolve to know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified meant everything he taught connected to the cross. This gospel-centeredness shaped both his message and ministry style. In contrast, our performance-oriented church culture often prioritizes polish over substance, even turning prayer into performance. We easily slip into manipulation, using emotional stories, rhetorical tricks, and psychological techniques instead of faithfully presenting the gospel. Paul came to the Corinthians in weakness and fear and with much trembling, recognizing God's strength manifests through human weakness. The cross message dismantles our ecclesiastical idolatries, our self-promotion, our devotion to professionalism, and our reliance on methods that promise results without dependence on God. Without the Spirit's illumination, we cannot truly grasp spiritual realities. God's wisdom about the cross, hidden for ages, has now been revealed through Christ. The Old Testament pointed to Jesus through veiled references, types, shadows, and structures like the Passover lamb and sacrificial system that sinful humans often misunderstood. The natural person finds spiritual truths foolish because our self-focus makes us unwilling to know God on his terms. We prefer controllable deities over admitting our rebellion against the true God. The spiritual person, any Christian indwelt by the Spirit, can discern spiritual matters incomprehensible to non-Christians. Christians understand both worlds, their former fallen perspective, and the spiritual reality revealed by God. This creates a chasm between believers and the world that only the Spirit can bridge. True spirituality isn't achieving elevated consciousness, it's being transformed by the message of Christ crucified. Christians easily divide over personalities and preferences, just as the Corinthians split into factions following Paul, Apollos, or Cephas, mirroring Greco-Roman philosophical schools. Paul saw this as evidence they were acting like mere men rather than Spirit-led believers. Through agricultural and architectural analogies, Paul establishes two key truths. Christian leaders are merely servants with specific tasks assigned by Christ, not figures deserving exclusive allegiance. And God holds these leaders accountable for how they build his church. One person sows, another waters, but only God provides growth. Paul warns about accountability. Builders must carefully build on Christ as the foundation. Materials may be precious, gold, silver, costly stones, or combustible, wood, hay, straw, but the day will test each work with fire. Many ministries today, built on human charm rather than the gospel of Christ crucified, will prove worthless when tested. Most dream of becoming great leaders, imagining success. Few consider the responsibilities and accountability that define cross-shaped leadership. Paul instructs the Corinthians to regard Christian leaders as servants of Christ and those entrusted with the secret things of God, servants stewarding the gospel.
What does it mean to be a world Christian? Paul introduces becoming all things to all people for the gospel. Though free, he makes himself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. This radical adaptability shows how cross-centered living requires sacrificing personal preferences for others' salvation. World Christians identify first as citizens of heaven, committed to the global church, prioritizing evangelism over cultural comfort. Paul occupies a unique third position, moving between Jewish and Gentile contexts while maintaining boundaries. Among Jews, he observes customs, though not under the law. Among Gentiles, he lives freely while under Christ's law. His flexibility has theological limits. He knows when to adapt and when to stand firm. Like Hudson Taylor adopting Chinese customs, world Christians distinguish between cultural preferences and gospel imperatives. What motivates this self-denial? Paul's evangelistic purpose. By all possible means, I might save some. Following the crucified Messiah means taking up one's cross daily. There is no other way to follow Christ.
The cross isn't merely a symbol. It's a pattern for living that transforms everything. In a world that prizes strength, the cross celebrates weakness. In a culture obsessed with status, it elevates service. In divided communities, it unites around a shared identity in Christ. For Christian leaders, this means rejecting ministries built on personality and embracing vulnerability and dependence on God's power. For all believers, it means identifying primarily as citizens of God's kingdom rather than any earthly tribe. The cross confronts our tendencies towards self-promotion, comfort-seeking, and tribal loyalty. It calls us to a radically different way of living that may appear foolish, but reveals God's wisdom. In our landscape, often defined more by political identities than the gospel, Carson's call to refocus on Jesus Christ and Him crucified remains urgent. Will you allow the cross to reshape not just your theology, but your ambitions, relationships, and priorities? The crucified Messiah invites us to die to ourselves that we might truly live.